Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying absolutely fabulous weather. Here we are in the cooler temps, and there is something we probably wouldn't even give 10 cents worth of time to thinking about, and that's a little creature that has such a phenomenal impact on us. It is the bee. Now, this little creature defies all of the laws of aerodynamics and much more than that. And my guest today, Stephen Buchman, is going to be the gentleman that's going to give us an inside history on a bee that comes from the rainforest. We're going to be talking about his marvelous book, The Bee Tree. And again, my guest is Stephen Buchman. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you. When I first was made aware of your book, I wasn't expecting anything as beautiful as this book is. And I was just so fascinated with the way you led off with this wonderful story, the spectacular illustrations, and then the history about this particular bee. Steve, when did you decide that this tiny little critter that we just know just a tiny bit about was going to take such a big part of your life?
Actually, I'm one of those little boys who never grew out of his bug and dinosaur phase, I guess. So, I started working with insects in about the third grade and did all the typical things of catching butterflies and beetles and making insect collections and raising caterpillars from butterflies and moths and letting them metamorphose and turn into adult butterflies and moths. But for this book, I started keeping regular European honeybees in high school. And then right out of grad school, which was UC Davis, I got a job with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I did that from 1979 until 2000. So I've really been a bee researcher and bee and flower lover my entire life. But the inspiration for the Bee Tree book from Cinco Puntos Press, even though it was just published this April, my co-author, Diana Cohn, who lives in San Francisco, we both share this passion for bees, and along with my illustrator, Paul Marocca, who lives in Tucson, Arizona, Paul and I started making a lot of trips to Malaysia. In fact, we've been there 9 times, and the latest trip was in February, almost 2 weeks during February of this year. But Paul would take blank sketchbooks and fill them up. We'd go out into the rainforest and collect flowers and leaves for him to illustrate. And literally, it was a labor of love that took literally about, I hope my next children's book doesn't take so long, but this one took about 8 years to bring to publication.
It is absolutely phenomenal, and I cannot imagine any teacher or parent not enjoying sharing this with youngsters, because it is just so exquisitely done. Now, Stephen, I wanted my audience to know that you're a member of the Entomology Department faculty at the University of Arizona. You have also authored and co-authored over 150 scientific papers and 8 books, and you have been very active in international pollination research, conservation, and very much in working with developing policies to protect the bees around the world and the plants that they pollinate. You served on the National Academy of Science Committee investigating the status of pollinators in North America. And you also got involved in the U.S. Postal Service because you wanted to help create 8 stamps on pollinators to be used in, to be issued as U.S. commemorative stamps during the year 2007. And then Diana, who is an award-winning book, children's book author. She herself is a beekeeper, which I found fascinating.
Right.
And she met you through a radio documentary. So radio's played quite an interesting role in your life.
That's true. I hadn't thought about it until now. But the impetus and this life-changing meeting with Diana Cohn, who is now associated with the Pantarea Foundation in San Francisco, she came to interview Gary Knaphan and I about a book we had written in 1996 called The Forgotten Pollinators, which really kind of started everything.
Now, why is there a pollination crisis that's affecting the bees? And we've got many different types of bees, and we'll go into the Malaysian bee, but right here in the United States, what is happening here that's being considered such a crisis?
Right. Well, two types of bees have been affected the most within the United States, and one is very familiar to everyone. It's the introduced European honeybee, or as we have in the southwestern United States now, the Africanized bee. But that bee, which is scientifically known as Apis mellifera, is not native to the New World. It's kind of an old world bee from the tropics and was brought here to our shores a little over 400 years ago by the Jamestown colonists, but they spread, and there are, you know, many, many thousands of wild or feral honeybee colonies, as well as about 2 million managed colonies, which are kept in the familiar white hive boxes by mm-hmm. commercial beekeepers. But unfortunately, the honeybee is beset by a bunch of problems, mainly disease organisms. There are bacteria which cause diseases like American and European fowl brood. There are protozoan diseases. There are fungal diseases. Two species of mites. One mite, which is really horrible. It looks like a giant Dungeness crab that hangs on the outside of the bees and sucks their blood. Other mites live inside the tracheae, the breathing tubes of the bees, and cause them to weaken and die. And now we have a whole raft of viruses, including one that was just, probably came into the United States in about 2004, but was just identified as such during the first definitive scientific paper, which appeared in the journal Science Express this September. This one is called the IAPV for short. It stands for the Israeli Acute Paralysis Virus.
Hmm.
And this virus may not be the absolute cause, but it seems to at least be a marker or indicator of other disease organisms and stressors. And so the researchers involved with it found that whenever it occurred in their metagenomic analysis, that IAPV seemed to be a 96% predictor of colonies that had been that had basically come down with what has been called CCD, or colony collapse disorder.
Now, with CCD, how is this affecting the bee population in the United States? It is highly contagious. How is it spread? Have they been able to determine what that is? Because the bees pollinate so much.
Right.
How could this be disastrous to our agricultural crops, and what are they doing?
Well, it can be spread, and unfortunately, unlike developing resistant bees, that is fairly, easier to do with, let's say, bacterial diseases. We all know how rapidly viruses mutate, so
mm-hmm.
it's more difficult to develop resistance for bee viral diseases. But The bees are affected by this, and the virus can be transmitted through beekeeping equipment and from the bees themselves. It's likely that the virus is actually getting into flowers, especially into the nectar, possibly through salivary enzymes with the bees, and then the next honeybee that comes along and slurps up some nectar from the same flower can potentially become affected. I mean, that's just a little bit of guesswork on my part. I don't think anybody's actually proven that, but certainly the virus is spreading. We know that it wasn't here before, and even though there are not apiary inspectors mandated by law in every one of the 50 states, there are enough that we now know that it's in about 30 U.S. states. So it is causing a problem. In fact, over the last year, I mean, it's especially worse over the winter, but during this last year, we've been able to see that as many as 25 or 30% of the beekeepers in the United States have lost anywhere from a quarter to, in some cases, 70 or 80% of their colony. So it's not the same level of losses of colonies have not occurred in every state and every location, but it's been spotty, and in some places the losses have been truly severe.
How does this affect agriculture?
Well, honeybees are the queen of pollinators. They can be managed economically. We have about 125 major agricultural crops that are grown in the United States. I mean, people think of apples, oranges, blueberries, sweet cherries, that sort of thing. But there are over 100 crops. And people don't think about the vegetables or the seed crops, alfalfa seed that doesn't just go into alfalfa sprouts, but basically fuels a lot of the livestock industry and a lot of other animals. So there's really a huge potential impact on American agriculture as we lose numbers of honeybee colonies. We had about 6 million managed honeybee colonies in the 1950s, and that's down to, well, it's controversial, but people estimate between about 2 and 2.5 million right now. And when you think about the fact that just one crop, although a very large and economically valuable crop, almonds in California, that requires to pollinate the almond crop in February or sometimes March, it blooms very, very early in the year, to pollinate just that one crop requires 1 million colonies of bees. So almost a half of all managed colonies in the United States are riding on 18-wheelers during February and March to the California almond orchards.
Wow.
The same kind of migration, commercial beekeepers following the bloom, occurs up the East Coast to pollinate cranberries and blueberries, like blueberries in Maine. So really, we have too few bees to go around to pollinate our agricultural crops, and the problem is just worsening. Now, I have to preface that by saying that Mother Nature has a little bit of redundancy built in, thankfully, and we have 4,000 kinds, 4,000 species of native ground and twig nesting bees in this country. Most people don't realize that. If you ask the average person to name the bees that they know, they would say honeybee first, then they think of the giant black and yellow charismatic bumblebee, and maybe they know about the all-black carpenter bee, or if they're a gardener, maybe they've seen a friendly little bee licking their sweat on their arms, and that's called a sweat bee. So we do really have lots and lots of native bees in this country, and often they're not recognized. They're some of the forgotten pollinators, and often honeybees get all the credit for pollinating everything when in fact that's not true.
Well, I know your book was a real education for me. Why is it that Malaysia was chosen? The story that you have, and I want to share this with my listeners, it's a story being told by someone who was raised in the forests of Malaysia. And it's a wonderful tradition, the honey collecting tradition. And people have to earn the right to be able to do this. And the illustrations, again, in the book, The Bee Tree, are absolutely exquisite. Why Malaysia? What made you choose to go there rather than to South America or Australia or some other place in the world?
Actually, I've been to Brazil and Australia and many countries in search of diverse bees and flowers. But Malaysia and Thailand, that area of Asia, has always had a strong appeal to me. Those are the oldest rainforests in the world, and they were the ones that Alfred Russel Wallace, the co-discoverer of evolution, talks about in his fantastic historical books like the Malay Archipelago. So they're just phenomenal forests full of incredible creatures. And the world's largest honeybee, Apis dorsata, lives there. And that's the bee that Diana and Paul and I talk about in our story, the bee tree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have to disagree a little bit with our publisher. They're calling this a fictional account. And actually, I'll confess, it is not a fictional account. It's a true story of an 80-year-old honey hunter, a fantastic individual who's an imam and a rubber tapper and rice farmer and part-time honey hunter during the season, and his name is Pak Tay. And it's the story of raising his two grandsons to essentially follow in his footsteps. And the first time I think I saw the trees were in 1993 or 94 at a scientific conference. And this is an area called Kedah Province, and it's in an area with very, very steep mountains, very close to the southern border with Thailand. And the trees, the Tualang trees, are the tallest trees in Asia. These trees rise to a height of 240 feet, only about 50 or 60 feet shorter than the California redwoods. So these are immense, immense trees. And to think that these men, the honey hunters like Pak Tay, risked their lives climbing what, to my eye, is a very flimsy ladder and basically using no climbing ropes. They do this on a moonless night during February or March, and the harvest lasts for a period of 2 or 3 weeks. But they're climbing the bees in the darkness, so these giant, more than inch-long honeybees can't see to attack them, to sting them. But they have a... in fact, we know that this occurred over 1,000 years ago, maybe 2,000 years ago. They learned to create these special torches made out of rainforest lianas. And they take these torches that are about 8 feet long and tie them on a long cord to their ankle and light them. They're not flaming, but they're kind of smoldering red. And so you see them climbing the tree, dangling this big torch behind them. It looks like a giant cigarette glowing in the forest. And when they get above the colonies, these bee colonies are immense. They're 8 feet across and 4 feet deep. It's a giant parabola, a giant half moon containing 50, 60, 70,000 of these giant honeybees. And they whack the branch and it with this glowing torch, and it creates just this fiery snowfall, basically. These sparks, these gorgeous orange sparks, just drift down lazily like snowflakes. And once they've done this a few times, the next thing you hear is just this deafening roar of 80,000 bees all at once coming off this comb and chasing those sparks to the ground. The first time I experienced that, I was sitting about 40 feet away from the base of the tree and just instinctively ducked and covered my head because I thought, you know, that was it. I'm going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with that many bees coming down the tree, you bet.
Yeah, it's a magical, magical show, and how they figured out that the bees will chase these sparks, I don't know. But once the bees are off the combs and they're all on the ground, they stay there until the next morning. So Pak Tay and the other honey hunters are able to then harvest some of the honey because the bees aren't on the comb. So instead of being stung many, many times, they'll get a few stings, but it certainly then becomes a safer operation.
Well, I was fascinated with the fact that what you're presenting with your story is how young children who are going to be the future climbers of these trees are, they have to go through a process so that they can adapt to what needs to be done. And Pak Tay had one of his relatives, a young boy, his nephew, if I remember correctly.
Right.
He had him working with him for 7 years, so he started when he was quite young.
Right.
And little by little gave him more and more responsibility because, of course, when you're real young, you don't have a lot of physical strength. But as he got older and stronger, then there was this wonderful part of the story where he has to climb 120 feet up this tree. Now, these trees, how long do they live? Because they're massive.
They are massive. They probably live, well, of course, things are growing much, much faster in the tropics. It's a perfect outdoor greenhouse. But it's still probably a tree that's 200 to 300 years old.
Mm-hmm. So here you have this tree that's constantly growing. And, you know, you portray so beautifully in this book the expression of the story as the young boy would have felt. You know, is he going to be, now that he's been told by Pakte that he's going to be honored to be able to take his place, this is what he's been getting him prepared for 7 years. And his question is, am I brave enough? Am I strong enough? And all of these things which as a young person we're all going to go through, because we look at someone who's older than ourselves, and if they're really good at what they do, we go, oh my goodness, can I ever be as good as them? And you bring that across so well. And also you bring across the fact that the young man is taught by his grandfather to honor the natural environment around him, that this was an environment that they lived in, and it was to be respected. And so every time he went into the forest, that you have to think about how you feel before you even go in the forest. And it was so reminiscent of the Native American energy. So many of the different tribes in teaching the younger generation, honor what's around you. This is our food supply. You just don't go out and slaughter just to slaughter. You have to respect the animal. And in the different tribes, they have different rituals that they go through before they go on a hunt, so that their heart and their mind and their spirit is in the proper place in space. And that's what you bring out about Pakte.
Oh, thank you. I mean, he's one of the most charming and charismatic individuals I've ever met in any country. They have a, well, he would go into the forest, and I would notice from the very first meeting that he would say something that I couldn't hear. I now know what he was saying, but he would touch his heart as he entered the forest. And they have a lovely Malaysian proverb, which is Tak Kenal Tak Cinta, which basically in English means you can't love what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the kind of reverence that they have for these bees, the honey, the wax, and the forest. It's an amazing, amazing place.
Mm-hmm. It really is. You also have a fabulous fable in here about a princess, and it's Hitam Manis, who
right.
was in a sultan's palace. Or she wasn't a princess. She was a commoner.
She was a commoner, right. And this was just magical for Diana and Paul and I. We fell in love with this legend. It actually goes back as far, or something very similar, into the Rig Veda. So, I mean, we're really talking about something that is a 2,000-year-old legend. And Malaysia has the longest unbroken monarchy of sultans anywhere in the world. I think it goes back 1,200 years in this Kedah province. And throughout Indonesia and some of the areas of peninsular Malaysia, you have this beautiful story of, well, part of the story is very chilling, but in the end it's quite beautiful. Hitam Manis is a commoner, but she falls in love with a sultan's son. And, of course, this is forbidden love. She's a commoner, and she can't even dare to look at the sultan's son, let alone think about marrying him. So the sultan's guards come after her and her friends with metal-tipped spears, and they're throwing spears at her, and one pierces her side, but in the legend, she is not killed, but she's miraculously transformed. So now this is the creation myth for the bees, so that when she's struck by this metal spear, she and her friends are transformed into the giant honeybees of the rainforest and fly away into the forest. So it's just, it's really an interesting story that, again, is you know, goes back about a millennium, and you can really hear this told by the honey hunters. I've heard through a translator, Pakte, tell it around a glowing oil lamp in the honey hunters' camp. And I've witnessed now about 15 or 20 different honey hunts, some by him, some by other honey hunters in Malaysia. And in deference to this legend, this incredible myth of Hitim Manus and the taboo against using metal, well, they don't use metal. Anything they put on the tree is wood. To make the ladder, they use fire-hardened pegs and rattan. The bucket is made of cow or water buffalo leather. They don't wear metal, and they don't use a metal knife to cut the honeycomb for harvesting the honey. They use a sharpened cow shoulder blade or a similar bone, and this is all in deference to the respect and taboo of not using metal with this incredible story of Hitim Manus.
I also loved the ritual that you shared. And that's what I like so much about seeing different cultures and being able to share the stories, which your wonderful book, The Bee Tree, does. But that is what the grandfather teaches the young man, and that is he takes the best of the honey or whatever piece he considers the finest and gives it back to the forest. And again, that's so reminiscent of what I have been aware of over the years of different Native American cultures. And I just think, what a wonderful way to teach respect to a youngster and how good it is to have this kind of attitude to give back to the forest. It's like if you cut a tree, plant a tree.
Exactly.
You know, this type of a thing. So you're, again, the beauty of your book is just marvelous. The history that you give, you have a picture of Pakte in here, which I think is marvelous. You go into the history of the rainforest, and I love how you describe about how the rainforest has multiple stack layers of plants, and if there's too much of a canopy, plants will die below. There are life forms on so many levels. That's why rainforests are so incredibly valuable. And my goodness, you said there were over 750 species of trees that could be found in just 25 acres of Malaysian rainforest. And when I think of how much rainforest is being destroyed throughout the world, I sure hope Malaysia is going to be wiser than the rest of the other countries in the world.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because there is logging, and even in a country like the United States, I mean, it's amazing, but we're here in the U.S., we're losing 6,000 acres per day to development, so, you know, it's happening everywhere.
Yes.
Our publisher, Cinco Puntos Press, which is in El Paso, Texas, allowed us something that probably a larger publisher wouldn't do, and they gave us this glorious space in the back that they call back matter. And Diana and Paul and I were able to create this little geography story and put in some photos of Pakte and his wife to tell about Malaysia and its peoples. We have a map of where Malaysia is because I figured that, hey, not a lot of kids or even adults know where peninsular Malaysia is, or the other parts, which are Sabah and Sarawak. And then we tell about the rainforest, the hornbills, the monkeys, the flowers, and then get into the, as they say in Bahasa Melaleu, Pak Laba, the giant honeybee. And we took some beautiful sketches out of Paul's sketchbook, and I have some photographs that I've taken of the bees, and we kind of blended them into a story of the honey hunters, and then kind of end with our respect and admiration for the honey hunters, and talk about what's going to happen in the future.
Well, I know your book is dedicated to all who cherish and celebrate the bees in the forest, the honey hunters of the past, the present, and the future. We're almost out of time, Stephen. What is a website that people can find out more about this wonderful work that you and your associates are doing?
Sure. They can definitely go to www.cincopuntos.org.
C-I-N-C-O-P-U-N.
Right, TOS.org. And they can also go to the one of the websites for the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign. I've been involved with them a lot for the last 7 years, and that is an easier one to remember. It's www.pollinator.org.
Pollinator.org. Stephen, or Steve, Stephen Buchman, B-U-C-H-M-A-N-N, and Diana Cohn have put this phenomenal book together, The Bee Tree. I recommend it highly. Not only will you get educated about a beautiful country that has a phenomenal culture and really respects and honors nature, but it will enable you to share it with the younger generation, too. That's what makes this world of ours so special. Stephen Buchman and Diana Cohn, The Bee Tree. Thank you, Stephen, for being with me today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back after this, so don't you go away. Good things to share with you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website. Go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. And if you would like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to in the U.S., 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line for everyone else at 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And if you are tuning in to the Donna Sebo Show for the first time, I'm so delighted you've been able to join our listening family. And if you want information on upcoming guests, well, check out my email newsletter, which is online at DelphiInternational.com. You can check my calendar. You'll find out what's going on with where I am appearing. Right now, there's an event coming up in December that's going to be in the state of Washington. But so far, I've not had to get on the road to do any more traveling. I think I've had a batch to last me for a while. But if you want more information about guests, check with BBS radio.com with a listing of the programs upcoming are there. Also, they are in my newsletter. And if you'd like to subscribe, don't hesitate to just send me an email to donna@delphiinternational.com, and we'll make sure that we add you to our mailing list. Talking about different cultures, I think it's so important. So many times we live in very narrow worlds, and we have assumptions about things. Maybe we have had very limited exposure. Maybe we've never even taken the time to talk with people of different backgrounds. And I think it always is interesting when you do, because every grouping of people, regardless of what part of the world they come from, have wonderful things to share. And we all have our superstitions and our various belief systems. And before we label anything good or bad, we should listen and try to find out what is really going on. And I was sent this wonderful story. I don't think I've mentioned this on one of my shows before, and I thought it just fit perfectly with what we were talking about the bee tree earlier in the show. Because the story of the grandfather, the man that's called grandfather by so many people, and his teaching and passing along his knowledge to the younger generation, because he knows the day's going to come when he's not going to be able to climb the trees. Well, I mentioned more than once during the interview about my awareness of certain traditions within certain Native American cultures. And, of course, there were hundreds of them throughout this country a few hundred years back. There's not so many today, but at that time there were. And each and every one had their own. Well, this is one that Debbie sent me. It's about a Cherokee Indian boy. And boys had to go through their rites of initiation. And it was part of your demonstrating that you had the right to take on responsibilities as a man. And unlike our cultural attitudes today, then, because life was much shorter, when a boy was about 8, 9, 10 years of age, sometimes around 12, but usually it was between 10 and 12, they had to go through these initiations because they had to be prepared for adulthood. So this is a story about a Cherokee Indian youth's rite of passage, and it's a legend about this. There was this Cherokee youth, and his dad took him into the forest blindfolded and just left him there. Now, what was he required to do? He was required to sit on the stump that his father put him on the whole night and not take off the blindfold until the rays of the sun were so bright that they would shine through the blindfold. Now, he had to be there all by himself, and he could not cry out or ask for help. That was absolutely a no-no. Once he survived that night, he is considered by the tribe that he is a man. Now, the other thing is the secrecy. He is not allowed to tell the other boys of this experience because each boy has to come into his own manhood. Well, can you imagine what it would have been like as a young boy? Your father, you know about this initiation. No one's allowed to talk about it. Can you imagine the fears that would run through his mind? He was quite frightened. According to the legend, when this was done and he was taken into the forest by his father, the blindfold on, he knew the rules. He could hear all kinds of noises. He heard beasts all around him. He wondered, is someone going to help me? He could hear the wind blowing the grass. It was blowing so strong sometimes he swore that the stump he was sitting on wiggled. But he never, ever moved because his father had said to him, you do not move, you do not cry out for help. He knew that he had to go through this initiation. Because once he did this, after all, it was only going to be one night. After all, then he would be considered a man by the tribe. Well, the night there in the forest was horrible. He just went through all of these stormy conditions, but finally things started quieting down, and eventually he could feel the warmth of the sun. it got to be warmer and warmer, and then he could see the sun through his blindfold, and he finally was able to remove it. Something very unique happened when he removed the blindfold. What was it? It was then that he saw his father. His father was sitting on the stump next to him, and his father had stayed awake the entire night watching his son. And the lesson that his son learned as he went through that initiation was that he was never alone. And even when we're not aware of it, there is an essence in life that is always with us. So the legend has it, the understanding of the boy who, because of the initiation, ended up becoming a man, realized that it is our fears, the blindfolds that we put upon ourselves, that keep us in a position where we're not able to really know what's going on. And I want to thank Deb for this, because I absolutely loved this story. And the reason I loved it is because I can look back on my own experiences of life and remember when I was so paralyzed with fear, I actually would freeze in my thinking. Has that ever happened to you? Where you just freeze? Nothing is working. Your thought processes just aren't functioning. And when someone can come along and give you a helping hand or shows you a little bit of thoughtfulness or compassion, then all of a sudden things start working. But sometimes, just like this young Cherokee boy, as the legend tells us, who had to sit all by himself and listen to all of these horrible things, when he took off the blindfold, and when he was sitting in the light,
hello, Donna?
He was able to see.
Can you hear me?
Oh, hello. I hear a voice on the line.
Ah, yes. Well, for some reason, they couldn't get through, and we were waiting for you to finish the story.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
I've got a caller on the line.
Hey, you got a caller on the line.
I've got a caller on the line. Okay. Well, I have finished the story. And by the way, for those of you listening, if you'd like to give me a buzz, we've got a caller on the line, but the telephone lines are open. I'd be delighted to light up your life with intuitive insight, and I'm going to get right to the caller. 877-876-5227 or Canadians 888-815-9756. Yes, caller. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Michael, and I'm calling from Melbourne Village, Florida.
Well, welcome, Michael.
Okay, thank you.
Did you enjoy the guests that we had on earlier?
The dinner and pro out of that time, but and I heard just a hair of it, and he sounded good, yes.
Well,
he sounded good. I don't remember who it was.
Right. It was Steve Buchanan. We were talking about the bees.
Okay, well, at any rate, I got somebody trying to beep through, but that's okay. Mary, I had this interesting dilemma. I'm an energy healer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a crown chakra person. I know another crown chakra person. And she's lost all her friends to her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because she keeps introducing her sister. Well, she tried to introduce me to her sister and say, well, you need to take care of her more than me. And in order to counsel her sister, I had to talk about her. And that's the way it is between them. They need to heal the relationship between each other.
Well, what's your question to me, Mike?
What I did is I said I can't be a traitor between both sides because that's doing treason. And so I just said, left her a message saying, you're my friend and I'm going to stick with you because you're the one you're the one I know and the one I want to talk to. But anyway, do you think that was the right thing?
I would have to disagree with you, Michael, and I would say this. Let me say this. In addition to what I just said, I disagree with you on one point, because if you are really going to be professional, whatever you say with the one person is held in confidence. It is never shared with the other.
Actually, they knew both things about each other. They both said it to me first.
Well, this is something that if they both are together in their thinking. You're not violating...
Well, that's true. They're together in their thinking, but they don't know they're together in their thinking. That's the problem.
Well,
they're very psychic.
Well, that is then, if you are going to...
Well, see, that's why I just don't want to have a relationship with both of them.
Well, you don't... It depends on what kind of a relationship you're talking about, Michael. If you're talking about a romantic one, that's a different situation.
No, this is just brother... This is just sister to sister. But
well,
the whole
then
thing about
you
it
have
is
to approach it.
They all—they both talk to me about the relationship all the time and complain about how it's not working, and they're actually asking for it to be healed.
Well, if they're asking for it to be healed, then you may need to work with them together. You, as the person that is going to be the advisor, if they are requesting that you be the teacher advisor, you have to detach. This is not something personal. And what I am detecting with you is that you're making it personal. Now, Michael, I have to take a break for a moment. So we'll take a break and we'll come right back. All right?
Okay,
so we're taking a break. Michael's on the line. If you'd like to give me a call, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Before we go back to Michael, I want to let you know about the guests that are coming up. Ed Bowen is going to be my guest tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the greatest Kentucky Derby upsets. If you love horses, you're not going to want to miss this. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Lisa Johnson, Winter's Eve and Christmas Eve. We're going to be talking about two beautiful children's books. Then also, Katie Bannister is going to be my guest on Thursday. We're going to be talking about her personal experience about the personal care attendant guide and why she developed it. Teaching Kids to Care is going to be how we're going to be closing out the week with Betty Young. Wonderful lineup of people, fascinating materials. You're not going to want to miss any of it. And be sure and tell your friends to tune into the show. And the archives are also available now. If you happen to miss the show, you can go in and listen to it at your convenience. Okay, Michael, I wanted to finish my thoughts with you on this because when you're talking about the two sisters and you're working as the energy healer, you need to detach from this. And if you're going to be the professional...
Well, that's the problem. Is with her sister, I'd want to be a professional. With her, I want to be a friend.
Then don't bother with it at all. If you cannot, you can still be the friend with one. But you can, as a professional, you can be a professional with both of them.
I don't want to be perfect. If one person doesn't have any money, she needs a friend.
All right.
Okay.
Then, Michael, you're missing the point.
Okay.
You are missing the point.
Okay, yes, I have autism, so I'm a little slow and have too much of an inclination to be honest.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with being honest, but you're missing the point. If you're a professional, you're a professional. that the one may not have funds, then give them an opportunity to work something out. But they have to be able to take it in a... They're telling you they want you to be professional with both of them. And that's the key. If someone is going to be a teacher, if someone is going to be the instructor, if someone is going to be the physician or the healer, people come to you for the purpose of having that professional expertise. And that's what you must respect and honor. Friendship is something that it has its place, and you're not going to lose the friendship. But they both need to be responsible. And if they value that, then you treat them accordingly. And if you're going to work with them together, they feel through you they will be able to have the harmony that they need. And I think that they're going on the intuitive base here. Respect that and have an expectation. And just know that they will work with you as a professional, and you handle it accordingly.
Okay, I'll try to do that, huh?
And I think, Michael, that is something that's so important. Because if you try to segregate it out and, well, I'll do this for this one and not one for that one. No, it doesn't work. It's not going to work. And you're not going to assist them in any way. The other option for you is to say, I am not the person you should come to. You should go to maybe someone that you respect and say, I value you as a friend. I do not choose to be in the positioning of being the resolver of this, which is your right to do. And then recommend that they go to someone that you know. If you
okay,
know someone
yeah.
that you really respect. So the choice
okay,
is yours.
I'll take that into account. I've really just never been caught into this thing where one person who I'm close to is trying to force me to go into a relationship with somebody they don't particularly like. I don't dislike them, and I respect them, but they're just not at my level. The first person is.
Well, that's not the issue, Michael. They don't have to be on your level. If they're coming to you and asking you for help, they're coming to you and asking you for help.
Okay, I'm having a little trouble hearing right now, but that's because my mom just started the car in the garage. Okay, well, okay.
All right, Michael, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
I can get it now.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. 888-815-9756. By the way, I thought I would chat with you. I know we've only got a couple of minutes now before we are going to be closing out the hour. It's so important if you are a person that is in business. Let's say you've started up a business and you really want to be able to let people know who you are. My gracious, marketing is always such a challenge. You want to make it easy for people to find you. Used to be you used the Yellow Pages, right? Well, the Yellow Pages is fairly costly for a lot of small business people, but the Internet is the other option. And there are so many ways that you can utilize the Internet, and the biggest thing is your global search engines. And you want to be able to find that venue that is going to bring you up readily in whatever arena of expertise you wish to have people know about. And global search engines look for the what. The localized search taps into the where as it pertains to a user's location. So you might want to conduct an Internet search for your particular kind of business to be sure that your information is popping up and that it's accurate and that it's up to date. And also, find out about local search engines. It might be in your own area of the country. And you can go, there's all kinds of resources for that. Look for some options about what can make you more visible on the web. And even though you might have to pay out a little bit of money for that, that may be something that is a very good thing to do. And you know what? The web is absolutely amazing. I forget how many billions of dollars are going to be spent this coming holiday season on the web, and people are using it every single day. It is absolutely awesome. So put your light out there. And I know it makes a difference because it's made a difference with me in the way I've been able to reach people. It makes a difference with this radio station, bbsradio.com, and it can make a difference for you. My goodness, we're out of time. It's been such a delight. My appreciation for Stefan Buckman for being my guest today. And we are going to be chatting with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Talk with you tomorrow.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.